Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net. I'm Dr. Marty Gentius, your host from Kent State University, and this week on Counselor Audio Source, Dr. Jim Messina speaks with Dr. Stephen Junta about evaluating court custody cases.
Today we're going to talk with Dr. Stephen Junta concerning the whole issue of custody evaluations. Dr. Junta received his PhD from the University of Florida in Marriage and Family Counseling. He is currently on the executive board of the Florida Mental Health Counselors Association, and he is employed as the Director of Program Development for Directions for Mental Health in Clearwater, Florida. Steve, could you tell us what are custody evaluations?
Sure. Custody evaluations are assessments either ordered by the court or determined that both parents maybe will get together and determine that a custody evaluation be done. It usually surrounds a dispute between a divorcing couple, or if they've already been divorced, a couple that's attempting to modify their divorce contract and change the way where the children reside, or some of the factors or variables surrounding the children's schedules and their residence.
So, Steve, given that that's what a custody evaluation is, are master-level counselors qualified to provide such evaluations, or do they need to have a doctorate?
That's a tough question to answer in a very general sense. You'd have to break it down, for folks that are listening to this, they'd have to break it down to determine what state they live in and the rules for that state. And I can only speak of my experience here in Florida. And even then, within the state of Florida, there are variables that come into play depending on the circuit and, for that matter, the judge that sits, usually in the family law division within that circuit. I can tell you that across the state, the general rule is in Florida that a master's degree is the minimum requirement. One needs to be very careful, however, how far you go with a master's degree. An argument could be made that unless you actually have a PhD or a substantial amount of experience post-masters, that it might not be wise to start doing custody evaluations.
That brings up another question for me then. How about licensure? Does the counselor who is providing such a custody evaluation need to be licensed? And what are the specific licensures that individual needs to qualify that individual to be a custody evaluator?
To give you an example from the state of Florida again, I was working for the 8th Circuit, which is the Tampa Bay area, and they had folks that were school counselors that were doing custody evaluations. They weren't licensed in mental health, and they were comfortable with that. If you're going to operate as an independent professional, if you're not going to work through a court-sponsored program where you're doing contract work for the courts, then I would suggest that you be licensed in mental health and that you carry a PhD or at the very least a master's degree with postgraduate work in individual assessments, that you'd be comfortable with being able to administer and score an MMPI or some kind of personality test. And that you have a substantial amount of experience in the field that you can show the judge on paper. Custody evaluators is the one specialty within our profession that is most exposed to liability concerns, claims. You're going to have, in any custody evaluation, typically you're going to have one party very upset. And in the process of responding to your assessment, could end up filing charges against you or bringing a grievance or complaint against your licensing board because of you. So you need to be very careful that you can prove that you're qualified before you start, be it at the master or at the doctoral level.
That also brings up another issue for me. You mentioned a judge, and you talk about contracting to do this work. Specifically, how are custody evaluations paid for? What are the various ways that they are paid for? Because it seems to me how they're paid for determines the kind of evaluation that you're doing, and it also seems your risk for liability increases if one party pays for it versus another. So could you kind of go through the range of how these custody evaluations are paid for?
Sure. Typically, they come in one of two flavors, if you will. The first way that custody evaluations are paid for directly by the clients. What will happen is the attorneys will get together and jointly decide on one person to do the assessment. Now, if you're interested in getting into this field, the trick is really not to market yourself to potential clients, but rather to market yourself to attorneys in the practice family law. Once both of them are comfortable with you, then typically the fee is cut right down the middle, unless there's a profound disparity in incomes. The fee is split right down the middle, and say a $3,000 fee for doing a custody evaluation, $1,500 from each person. The other way of doing it is by doing contract work through the circuits or through some government entity that has the structure already designed for custody evaluations. And then they'll employ subcontractors. You would be one of those. Sometimes the competition is very fierce, and in some circuits, there are very few folks interested in doing custody evaluations. It does limit your liability a little bit by going through the courts, but those court-based programs that I've been associated with make it real clear to you that all the liability is on your shoulders. So what makes it a little less concerning is the fact that the clients often will assume that your performance is somehow supported by the court system, and so they're a little less likely to react to a negative assessment directly at you. You can hide sometimes behind the idea of you working for the court system.
So I guess I'm hearing you that if you worked for a court system under contract, you're chances of suffering some malpractice or liability kind of case in court is lessened versus if you're doing it privately for the couples.
Right. But not on paper. Only in the sense that their perception is out there that you're somehow buffered by the court system. In fact, if you're going to be doing contract work for the court system, the liability is still there, just as it would be if you were in private practice.
So let's get into specifics. What is actually the activity that you do when you're performing a custody evaluation? What are those specific things that you do that helps you then come up with this custody evaluation report? Because I'm really not clear. Do you work with the parents, with the husband and wife who are getting a divorce? Do you work with the child? Do you work with all of the above? I've never really understood what is that exactly goes into such an evaluation.
Again, I guess you could say it comes in two flavors. If you're going to be doing contract work with the courts, then they're going to establish what they expect from you as a minimum standard. If you're going to be doing private practice, it varies across the board. There's some interesting articles where they break down custody evaluations and look at what kind of performances were expected of the assessor. Typically, there's going to be a home visit for sure, both that there's at the paternal home and at the maternal home. There's going to be an assessment made of the father and of the mother's parenting abilities. You're going to do a background check if they have any records, a DUI check, a criminal background check, driver's license. You're going to check for any previous mental health issues or histories. And you're going to get this information from them whether they want you to or not, because certainly if you attempt to hide anything from a custody evaluator, it only stays hidden as long as it takes to get to the other spouse's house. She's going to tell you or he's going to tell you about the DUI. So you gather up all this information. You let them know up front exactly what you expect to do. You're going to be contacting collateral sources. In fact, collateral sources are probably the most objective and most valuable sources for your information. And that would include school counselors, this might include a minister, other therapists that may have been involved, couples counseling. It's going to include their employer, and that's something that has to be done very discreetly. But that some custody evaluators I know ask them for references, and they ask each spouse or each parent to pick five people to interview. And sometimes those five people or those collateral sources will lead you into the next set of people to interview. They're going to do interviews with the child. You're going to, and again, depending on their age, the younger kids, you probably may only spend a few minutes with them just to see what kind of influences or what kind of pressure the child is under from other adults about their role in the assessment. But with older kids, you might come right out and ask them, well, you know, if they're 15, where do you want to live? Would you want to live with your mom or your dad, and why? You might check with paramours or second husbands or second wives. You're going to check with who else? Parent observations. You're going to be doing parent observations either in your office or at home. I like to go to the homes and not do this at my office. You get a lot more information when you visit the folks at their house.
Steve, what I'm hearing is a lot of observation, a lot of interviewing, a lot of references, but I hear the word evaluation, and that immediately conjures up in my mind testing. Is there any formal testing that gets involved in this whole custody evaluation?
Good question. And again, it's going to depend on your state. In the state of Florida, we're fortunate. We, with the appropriate academic background, training, you can do anything that a psychologist in the state of Florida can do with respect to testing, including the MMPI, something you mentioned earlier. There's not a the collateral sources and direct observations are probably the two most valuable tools. Collateral sources being probably the most valuable tool. And so assessments are not necessarily the strongest suit. But there are states, like in Tennessee, where you may actually have to hire a psychologist to interpret the MMPI. You would administer it and then send it out for interpretation. So it kind of depends on the state. It depends on how much money is involved, to be honest with you. If two doctors or two brain surgeons, if you will, are in a dispute over custody of their children, you're going to want to do an MMPI. You're going to cover every base because those folks have their resources at their disposal to bring you to court and ask you why you didn't do the MMPI. And if the reasons why is because in your state you're not eligible to do that because of licensure laws or because you're not qualified yourself, you're going to need to do it.
Steve, I've been adding up the amounts of time that it would take to do a custody evaluation given the model you're presenting. I was wondering what you could give us would be the average length of time it takes you to do such an evaluation. But more importantly, for those of us who are less adept at doing computer typing and report writing, how big is a report in one of these evaluations?
Well, the two brain surgeons fighting over their 15-year-old child would take as many as 200 pages. I've seen 200-page documents for a custody evaluation. Typically, they're at 50 pages. If you're really good at what you do and you've got it down to a science, you can do a custody evaluation in 40 hours. Most custody evaluations take do it right and to cover all your bases take 80 hours a week. And it really does depend on how well you type and how much ground needs to be covered. If one of the parents, it turns into 80 hours when one of the parents has a long criminal history or a long driving record problem or a substance abuse issue. There are some really unusual factors involved. Typically, you have to remember that parents kind of deserve each other. So it's rare that one parent has emotional problems, say, and the other parent doesn't. And so if you see one parent with problems, that's when you know 40 turns into 80 because you've got probably two parents to deal with.
Well, now that you've completely overwhelmed me with the amount of time and the amount of work it takes to do a report, You've conjured up the big question in all our minds. How much is an evaluation like what you're describing? What is the cost for such an evaluation?
Before I give you the magical figures, know that when I say 40 hours or 80 hours, know that you don't work one custody case at a time. You may be working three or four at a time, and so you'll schedule interviews and collect documents for three or four people. So there's an economy associated with, you know, with multiple assessments going on. The price varies. There are contracts out there, circuits in the state of Florida, where you can get $3,000 for a custody evaluation, and they expect you to work for about 40 hours to get that $3,000. There are other places where they'll only pay you $15 or $500. There was I went to a meeting, a statewide meeting of family law directors for the circuits, and one lady said, "I want you to do all the custody evaluations in my circuit," and it was five counties wide, and I'm like, "Wow, I'm gonna have to hire three or four people to pull this off." And it turns out that there was no money available in the circuit for custody evaluations, so she wanted me to do all of them. She just didn't have any money. Probably the best place to go is private practice. Now, you start off, frankly, you start off doing free custody evaluations for the guardian ad litem program, and start getting a name for yourself. Volunteer as a guardian ad litem. Ask the guardian program that you only do family law cases. That's how I started, doing free custody evaluations for the guardian programs in the state. And then you start getting in with attorneys, and when they start finding you credible, and by credible I mean not as touchy-feely as they suppose counselors to be, but very professional and very much about the business of doing custody evaluations, detached. You start getting into that network and try to move from free ones to the court ones, the court-sponsored programs, where you're getting paid 50 cents on the dollar, into the private practice, where those two doctors, an 80-hour evaluation, you could easily get $5,000, $7,000 for something like that. Right now in this state, the average price for a custody evaluation is $3,000, $1,500 up, well, I say $3,000, three to five, half of it up front before you start the project and half of it when you have the assessment completed. Know that this includes court appearances too. Usually what you do is you ask around, find other folks in your community that are doing custody evaluations, just get an idea there about what the market does. But know that when you do an assessment, you're going to end up in court. At the very least, doing the deposition. And typically up on the witness stand. And remember that one of the attorneys will think that you're the greatest thing since sliced bread, and the other one would think that you're Saddam's, you know, Goomba. And so he is going to take, or she is going to take that evaluation and find, because you will make mistakes, and find every one of your mistakes and then twist it around and try to punch as many holes as they can into this evaluation. It can be, I personally find it entertaining, but it can be an ugly experience if you're in any way emotionally attached to the process or emotionally attached to the quality of your work. You can't afford to be. In this case, it has to be almost an academic exercise to survive in this field.
You bring up a very important point. It's the court testimony. My understanding that if you're going into a court to testify, that is typically a per hour rate that you get paid. Now, in this situation, is this court testimony part of the fee that's already pre-established for the evaluation, or is this over and above?
It depends how you set it up. The way I had it set up is with my private practice stuff was the first deposition, X number of hours, would be included in the price. And if there was a court hearing, then yes, a formal hearing, I would appear at that. And I was willing to spend a day doing that. But that's it. And then anything after that, there was a dollar figure of $200 an hour to be in court. And when you put that, I front load free time, let them know that it's all one package. And then you tag on any excessive charges, any other experience that's going to transpire when you have to go back to court three or four times. those kind of things, you want to put a price tag on. And then they'll be very careful about what time they ask you to show up at court, and they'll try to get you out of there first, and they'll let Aunt Harriet testify afterwards, and they'll put you in.
Steve, I had to stop you here for a second because I felt the need to look at the mathematics of this, because I'm beginning to wonder if our listening audience may not already get turned off to the whole concept of custody evaluations, just given the time constraints here. So if indeed you're talking, and I'm going to go with 40 hours at $1,500, we're talking $37.50 an hour. However, I'm hearing, quite frankly, given the little obsessive compulsive that most of us tend to be, that it will never boil down to just 40 hours, given the fact that we're nervous about the liability, we're worried about the court testimony, and it's conceivable that you're going to go anywhere from 10 to 15 additional hours. I have to ask you, what is the benefit, or what is the payoff here for a counselor to even be open to doing this custody evaluation work?
A couple. First of all, you want to be, it's a job that, or a field that you have to be interested in first and have an appreciation for it. I don't want to call it a calling. We tend to call it everything a calling nowadays, but you have to have an interest in doing it. When you do the math, if you're just doing contract work, it's no better than a part-time job, and a little bit better than a part-time job. But when you start working your way up to where you could do private practice, and at the bare minimum, you're going to be charging $3,000. And if it's a 40-hour a week, or if it takes you 40 hours to do this evaluation at $3,000, that's $75 an hour. That's $75 an hour without any kind of third-party payer issues. Your checks never bounce. Well, they shouldn't, at least. And there's no calling to see if you're on a board. There's not a lot of overhead as far as having a secretary and things like that. That's something you can do literally out of your office. It's a great part-time job at $75 an hour. And then once you start developing a reputation and work your way up, if you are good at this, then it's $5,000 for custody evaluation. And now we're talking about making $100, $125 an hour, which isn't too bad.
Well, now that we've dealt with the economics of the custody evaluations, let's go into some of the ethical and professional identity issues. I know that the American Counseling Association and American Mental Health Counselor Association have partnered with the National Board of Forensic Evaluators credentialing process, as well as recognized, approved, and endorsed their workshops and home study guides. Should people who are interested in doing these custody evaluations become involved with this National Board of Forensic Evaluators credentialing process?
Yes, the answer is yes and no, actually. In the beginning, not necessarily. I wouldn't invest a lot of money in the very beginning, especially when you're doing custody evaluations for free and you're learning the process with the Guardian program. Which, by the way, had you protected, assuming you maintain ethical standards, you're immune to prosecution as a guardian ad litem. So you don't even need liability insurance, although I wouldn't recommend not having it. So in the beginning, no. Starting off just being a member of ACA or a member of UMCA is enough. Later on, as you move up the ladder, if you will, then yes, I think being certified certainly helps you when you start moving from circuit to circuit. Each circuit, by the way, each judge will qualify you regardless of your credentials. And so showing him your vita where, you know, you're a member of X number of organizations, when you've taken X classes from X institutions is important. But no one separate line on your vita carries so much weight that it makes you a sure bet in the judge's eyes.
So you're telling me that this National Board of Forensic Evaluators actually is a certifying body for people who do this kind of work?
Yes, it is. However, it's still going to be up to the judge to determine whether or not you're qualified to do the job. So I wouldn't start off investing a lot of money and time in certifications. I would wait. As your practice builds, then you start throwing the credentials behind it.
Are there any other organizations that one should belong to if they're going to do custody evaluations? And I'm going to also add on, is there any other additional postgraduate training that individuals might want to get into to ensure that they do a good job in this custody evaluation work?
If you already have a PhD from a counseling ed program, chances are excellent. You've taken advanced work in individual assessment. And yet you've probably wrapped your head pretty tight around MMPI or some other personality instrument, an IQ test, that would be important too. So doing parenting, what's the right word, parenting inventories, child rating scales, or things that are even at the master's level are pretty common in our field. If you only have a master's degree, then you do want to get it on paper that you've been to some workshop, some weekend workshop, where you've addressed individual assessments at a sophisticated level. You can't just count that first entry class that you took in your master's degree where they taught you what reliability and validity is. That's not enough.
This is an interesting point, this idea of additional training from what you just mentioned. It leads me to the question of why is it that when I look at curriculums at counselor education programs, I see nothing in their curriculums that even hints that a graduate of their program would do custody evaluations? Is that a lack in these counselor ed programs? Is it myopic of their view, or are they just not interested in training their counselors to do this kind of work?
Tough question. What I failed to mention, and I should right now before I address that, is there is one organization that you should belong to. The acronym is AFCC, and it's been AFCC for a long time. They keep changing what it stands for. It's currently called the Association for Family, Court, and Community Professionals. They have a journal, the Family Court Review, that is excellent, and it's interdisciplinary. There are lawyers involved. Social workers, psychologists, psychiatrists, great journal, really interesting articles that are applicable, not all theory-based. And I would recommend that you get those journals, and I would recommend you become a member of AFCC. And if we talked about trainings, I would recommend their trainings above any other. They have really good stuff coming out of that organization. Back to your question. There are only so many hours in the day. I do think that we may not be spending enough time with our counselors today, exposing them to application of theory. Sometimes we get a little carried away with the step. Sometimes we fail to include the step that takes theory to practice. So I do think we could tailor our programs better to practice. I'm a member of UMCA. Of course, I'm always concerned about practice. But I also think that it's an obligation of the students, or I guess really one step back from that. It's our obligation as members of the academy to educate our students that they need to take control of their program and give them the options of applying the stuff in certain fields and let them know in advance how they should tailor their program to meet what they plan on doing once they get out of the field. And let me give you a real quick example. An ethics class. I taught an ethics class where I asked the students, when they gave examples about how they were going to apply theory to practice, to think about it specific to their setting, where they either currently work or where they plan to work once they get out of here. So, you know, marriage and family folks were doing marriage and family dilemmas, and school counseling folks were doing school counseling dilemmas versus a generic ethics class where we tend to bounce all over the board. So there are ways of doing it. I think we can do a better job. But, again, there's only so many hours in a day and only so many classes we can expect from our students.
It does seem to me, however, that it's imperative on the part of counselor education programs to broaden their vision for their students by bringing people in like yourself to talk specifically about these specialized applications of the theory that they're learning in school. And given that, have you ever talked about custody evaluations in a school environment?
I have. If I was working with just students in a school counseling program, it's still important that we discuss custody evaluations from the perspective of being an expert witness. You are going to, school counselors typically are going to be exposed to these things. I know that one of the first calls I make when looking for collateral information is the school counselor. So my conversations with school counselors and what little exposure I have working within the school systems, there are always attorneys involved in custody, parents involved in custody evaluations, and attorneys knocking on the doors of school counselors. But yes, they need to be exposed to it.
Steve, given that students in counselor ed programs typically are not being prepared to do this work, at what point would you suggest that a graduate of a counselor education program begin to consider getting involved with custody evaluation work? What would be the first baby steps they need to take in that regard?
Well, now I'm the program development director for a community-based mental health agency. And I think looking back on my career now, if there was one thing I could do to expose myself to this and to a myriad of fields within mental health and factors that influence the welfare of our clients, I'd have all these people involved in social work for children. I'd have them either caseworkers working with abused and neglected children, or I'd have them volunteering as a guardian ad litem. You're working with abused and neglected children. I think that's, to be honest, that's probably the single greatest job to get your feet wet in this field. That's one way of doing it.
The interesting thing, if I'm hearing this, and you've not mentioned it at all, is the role of a counselor as an advocate for children. It seems to me that you are really telling me by everything that you described today that the reason why you're excited about this role is that you advocate for kids and what's best for them in the long run, and that you end up being in a position of power where you can share with a judge that observation that you believe this child is going to most benefit from based on the evaluations you've made. Is that correct?
Okay, we should probably end this with this last story. We spent the last 30 minutes talking about how to make money without talking about the motivation, the initial, the genesis of why I do this, and that's my interest in with abused and neglected children. I've been working with abused and neglected kids my whole life in mental health. And one of my first cases when I moved back here was working with a mom who was fighting for custody, a divorce modification, fighting for custody with the children, or both kids, both girls. And I won't give all the grand details, but the bottom line is I was only employed by the mom. And that's another thing you can do we haven't mentioned in the interview today is you can be employed by just one side, and then you're not really a custody evaluator. Now you're a subject matter expert, and you're being hired as an expert witness. And so that's what I did. I collected all the data. There were interviews and tapings and all kind of funky stuff. And I went through all this stuff, and then I testified. And as I was testifying, it was clear in my mind, it still is, that mom was the appropriate person to have custody of these two kids. So I was testifying against the father. And when it was all done, the father still kept custody of the children. But the judge recommended that there be a parenting coordinator assigned to this couple, this family. And they were poor. They had spent every money they could between me and the attorneys. So I volunteered to do it for free. I volunteered to do it for free at the judge's request, but only because it was actually the father, the gentleman I just testified against, who first recommended that I continue to work with the family, and that led to me being a parenting coordinator, yada, yada, yada. But the bottom line is that Dad was conscious of the fact that all my efforts and all my decisions weren't based with his ex-wife being the client, but that his children, two girls, were really the clients. And so that's been my focus, and I recommend it to anybody that's interested in being in this field to always see the children as your clients, not the attorneys, not your reputation, not the judge, not the parents. And you'll do fine. And you'll have a rewarding experience. You'll be very proud of the work that you do, I think.
Well, thanks, Steve, for ending this on this upbeat note. And I do believe that we counselors can learn a lot from individuals like yourself who do such advocacy work in the courts for children. So thanks very much for this information. And if people need to get more information concerning this custody work, you would recommend what resources they could look up on the internet or in the library.
In addition to becoming a member of AFCC, which, by the way, exposes you to listservs and a number of other tools at your disposal, you can always contact me. My address is my name. Well, you can go in the 491 licensure board for the state of Florida. My contact information is there. I would also contact local chapters of AFCC within the state, and you can pick up the telephone book, frankly, and find four or five people that, or go online and find four or five people in the community that are, that market themselves as custody evaluators and invite them out to lunch. And you can learn a lot about how to get connected there. And of course, as always, be a faithful member of your local American Mental Health Counseling Association. That should help you, network in the right direction.
Well, this is Jim Messina closing this interview with Dr. Steven Genta on custody evaluations, and it is our hope that this has been a good experience for you to listen to.
You've just heard an interview with Dr. Steven Genta by Dr. Jim Messina regarding evaluating court custody cases. Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at counselaraudiosource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871-4015. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work.